Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. We're here live doing a feedback episode. It is Sunday, May 1st, 2011, and I've assembled a glorious panel of bright and intelligent people. First of all, calling in from their homes is Glenn Ostlund. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And Mike Tannehill.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Now, this is the first time you've been back on, except when I snuck you in several months, isn't it?
I think November was when we did the Abraham one.
Ooh, it was December. It was right before Christmas.
You recorded it, but then we didn't broadcast it till just a couple weeks ago, right?
Yep. Right. So it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. And then in the studio, we have, first of all, Rich sitting across from me. Hey, Rich.
Hey, guys.
Hey. And, Zilpha.
Hello.
Hi, Zilpha.
Hi.
And Robin's here too.
Hello. So happy to be here.
It's nice to have y'all here. And, let's see, out in the, I don't have my chat up. I should be watching what's going on. Out in the chat room, we have, several of our friends. Hello, chat people. Welcome to Mormon Expression Live. We're not doing as many of these anymore. We did the book club for a while, but I think we've decided we're going to change direction. I guess before that, let's just set the what we're talking about. Then we can go. So tonight is a feedback show. How long has it been since we've done a feedback show?
Well, we sort of did one the beginning of January, where we talked about
the 100th episode. Yeah. So it's been since January. So the idea is we like to be as transparent as we can in the podcast and self-referential, I guess. So that, you know, we kind of discuss what's going on and get feedback from those who are out there. And this gives us a time to read some of the feedback we get on the boards or emails we get. So the kind of direction and we can address some of those questions. Actually, when we started the podcast, the format was going to be that what I wanted to have is people call in and leave messages or send us audio, and then we would tack those on at the end of the next broadcast. But that just never worked. So instead, we've sort of done a compromise, and we do this every so often.
Now, why does it work? Doesn't it work? Did people not send it, or could you not figure out how to do it?
No. Well, would I admit it if it was the second? No, it's not. It's not technically hard. No, it was that we just didn't get enough feedback that way, and it's partly because of the format. You know, I think a lot of people listen to the podcast when they have time and opportunity. So they're not
necessarily sitting in a front of a computer or a place where they can record something.
Yeah. And recording something like that can be a little complicated. We did have the phone number. I haven't given the phone number out in years. I should probably cancel. I'm still paying like $4 a month or something for that.
I also wonder, John, how many people actually are staying current with us as we're going through, you know, because I was talking with a guy the other day who he said, he'll download a bunch, maybe 6 months, 12 months after the fact. And then he gets really excited about some things and he'll go onto the blog to leave some comments. But it's just been so long. He thinks, why even bother?
Yeah.
It's so far past.
But nobody else is making comments anymore.
Nobody else is in a discussion. So maybe people just don't have an incentive to get involved.
Well, I think a lot of people that I've talked to do keep up with it. And they check on the comments. They may not post. And some people, I mean, I don't listen to every single one either. And John said that he doesn't. I mean, we're busy people. So we just keep up with as much as we can. And I'm sure everybody else is the same way.
Yeah. I won't admit which ones I don't listen to, but it's hard. You know, we put them out there, but you know, one of the reasons we do the format is they have a long, long life. You know, there's a lot of really great, information people put up on the boards, but those have a half-life of about 6 days at the max. And then that stuff just sort of disappears into the ether. And this sort of format sticks around a lot longer and allows people to sort of digest it. And I just think that we evolved to listen to things and learn that way. We didn't really evolve that much to read. And I think our listening comprehension, especially emotionally, is much higher than our reading comprehension. So I think that's one of the strengths of the format.
Yeah, we connect with the human voice, and it can tell us a lot more than just words can, because we can listen to the inflections and.
Yeah, but I think even a strong listener, you know, some of the people on the board saying, you know, they're one or two behind or whatever, and it, you know, you can get caught. That's the way I do. I oftentimes go at work. In my job, I don't get a lot of time to listen to podcasts anymore, but sometimes I do, and then I'll catch up with what I can listen to, but then I might go a couple weeks without listening to anything. So there you go.
So have we gotten any feedback?
Yeah. So I've got my agenda on some of the things that are out there. The first thing I want to talk about is our live event. I wanted to talk about, why in the world we're doing it.
Another excuse to get together and party. You guys are so awesome. I mean, not party literally. There's no alcohol in the event.
I grew up Mormon. So
you don't need alcohol.
What exactly does it mean when people say party?
Party.
There's a couple things I don't know the definition of. I don't know the definition of the word party. I don't know the definition of the word neck. You know, like as in.
How about petting?
I don't know the definition of the word petting either. As in, we were necking and petting at the party. I have no idea what you're talking about. You just used three verbs that I am unfamiliar with. They would scare me with them. You know, no petting. And I'm like, ooh, that sounds intriguing, but I don't know what you're talking
about.
That's
why I never had pets. I didn't know what to do with them.
You shouldn't pet them, that's for sure.
Exactly. But don't they need love too?
Mm-hmm. So the live event, we did the live event first time last year, and the idea, well, this sort of goes to the fundamentals of why the podcast exists at all, which is, you know, there's a lot of people out there, especially in the process of either moving their faith or losing their faith or going on their faith journey, that find themselves very much alone. You know, the church has a lot of great internal support mechanisms for members, but only so long as you're staying within the furrow. And once you leave that furrow, there is no safety net or mechanism to help people who are having doubts or who have a non-traditional view. So if you know, your mother goes to the hospital or your daughter falls down and breaks her leg or you need help moving, I mean, the church is just wonderful and great in its support structure for its members that way. But if the same member is having a faith crisis, you're going to be left out in the cold. And there's not a lot of resources the church gives other than, you know, pray, pay, and obey. So I think things like Mormon Expression are valuable, not to help you leave the church per se, but it's a value because there's other people out there, friendly voices, hopefully, who are dealing with the same sort of issues that you won't feel so alone.
And who think more similarly to you than people you can find elsewhere, especially in your ward, maybe.
Well, I think actually there's probably, truth be told, a lot of people in every ward who think similar. But the ward, the mechanism itself, is designed to shut that sort of dialogue down.
It makes you feel, just like you said earlier, too, it makes you just feel so isolated. And it was almost like when my wife and I had our journey out of the church, it seemed like we were just amazed to find that there are other people like us, you know, mm-hmm. that we'd stumbled upon something so taboo and something so foreign and something so forbidden that we weren't. You can't take those questions to anybody because you don't want to hurt their faith. So it's, mm-hmm. that's why the live event.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that was, we'll come back to the live event, but this was another bullet point I had to talk about tonight. Let's talk about safety. So there's been some discussions around the Damu lately, about safety and being safe for members and being safe for non-members. And I want to address that some. Mormon Expression is not safe, and it's not safe by design. I do not believe, in the milk before meat philosophy at all. I believe that Mormons are intelligent people, and Mormons have the ability to process lots of difficult information, and it's not my job to sugarcoat it for them.
And I would call that a safe place where you can discuss anything and you can discuss the truth without having to make it sound dull, sweet, and sensitive.
And you trust us all to be adults and be able to listen to it and process it.
But while being safe, it's also scary.
Right. It can be scary, but it is safe.
Yeah.
What's safe? You guys lost me.
It's safe.
What is safe? What is it?
Mormon expression.
No, it's not.
It's safe in that we are only interested in exploring issues and trying to get to the truth of things. Definitely feels safe to me.
And we won't report you to your bishop.
Well, yeah, how much safer can you get?
So, for example, we curse. We talk about sex. We speak ill of the Lord's anointed. We bring up hard topics. But there are going to be there's going to be a certain segment of the population, a huge segment of the Mormon population that when presented with material that we have on the podcast are going to run in the other direction.
As fast as they can.
As a matter of fact, probably since the podcast started, I've received about 10 emails from 10 different people, I'm guessing, who have said something of this effect. I started listening and I quit listening altogether. I couldn't take it. But then later, you know, I came back to it. And I am willing to have a smaller listenership and not try to make things palatable. Mike, you've been awful quiet.
Oh, I'm just trying to think what the safety thing was in reference to, which
we're not naming names. It's just, and it's not any one thing in particular. It's a discussion that comes up, and it's not between us. It comes up between some of the different bulletin boards out there. Because, you know, there's a lot of online boards. There's a lot of online, there's groups on Facebook.
Resources and, for.
Right. Your new group on Facebook, I've heard some people that want to comment there, but they're worried their families might find out that they're talking to you.
Right.
And then I have the opposite problem where I have faithful people that when I type on there, it shows up on their news feed. And they're like, what are you saying? Who are these people you're talking to? So I get it. It's both sides there.
Right. So that's a great point because you asked me, Mike, you sent me an email asking if we want to make the group. You know, we have a Facebook sort of fan page, you know, like everybody else in the world has for Mormon Expression. We started a community a week or so ago where people can get on.
A very busy community.
Mormon Expression community.
Yeah. If you search for, Mormon Expression
Facebook.
Podcast community and then you just ask to join and somebody will put you right in. But it's a public group. And I think to me that goes with the principle of Mormon Expression is that, you know, we need to kind of live out loud in a sense. Now I know not everybody's going to be comfortable there, but I'm not going to create another secret group on Facebook. Because there's enough of them, and that's just sort of not the philosophy behind the podcast. I think there's a lot of things in Mormon history, culture, a lot of things that the brethren say that need the light shined upon them and need to be discussed, that human beings need to process that stuff.
And the fact that people are struggling with their faith doesn't always need to be hidden in the shadows, because then people like us who, as we struggled through that, felt like we were alone because nobody was talking about it. Nobody was living out there with those issues.
Yeah, because I think what the church has really effectively done is to shut down that dialogue. It's like I was saying just a few minutes ago. There's actually probably in any given ward, there's a good segment of people who don't believe. There's another segment of people who are very liberal. And the number of people who are just like straight line is probably much smaller than you would expect. And what the church has done is made it so they can't talk to each other, so they can't discover each other, so they don't know anybody else is out there like that.
Yep. So, Mike, why don't you share the example of what happened?
I don't remember if it was the Holy Ghost one or the Adam and Eve one, but I was commenting with the group there, and that showed up on a friend's news feed. She thought I was discussing sacred topics too loosely. She thought I was being too familiar in my reference to our Father in Heaven. I was calling him Jesus's dad, and she thought that was horrible. And what was the other thing, Glenn? I sent you a thing about it.
Well, I made a rather flippant remark about a rather private part of your anatomy. And, you know, this was something that came up on her news feed. You know, that she wasn't somebody who came looking for it on the Mormon Expression podcast community. It just boom was right there on her Facebook page because she's a friend of yours on Facebook.
Right.
And, you know, so because of that, you took yourself out of the community. And then she sent you an email about all of the other things that she was seeing that was coming through you into her that really shook her testimony. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much it shook her testimony, but just things that we had said about, you know, Adam and Eve having, you know, Adam having an oatmeal personality and Eve, you know, having to work it to try and, you know, I mean, it was just things that now she was saying when she would go to the temple and watch the film, how was she going to get these things out of her mind that we had said, it had forever colored, you know, what, and so now her she was going to have to,
right.
Yeah, and she was going to have to shield herself and her children even more from the world and, you know, things like that. So I mean, I think it speaks to what we're talking about with safety, that John's saying it's not going to be a safe place.
No, the world's not a safe place. Nate Kenner, right. Hey Nate, posted, family and friends stalking our online activity even by accident makes some of us reticent to say things which, though true to us, sometimes hurt people's feelings. Yeah, this is the balance, and this is the fundamental question of safety. And this is a lot of Mormons, and I think it's a minority, have very, very poor boundaries. It's very odd that somebody would be your friend or your family and then light you up for something another one of your friends says.
Yeah.
I mean, in the normal world, that is completely unacceptable behavior, but it happens all the time. Sinclair asks if there are solutions on Facebook. There are, kind of, because you can set it down so that people won't see that. But you've got the problem of somebody posting on if one of your friends or relatives is friends with somebody else, and there's these weird, bizarre triangles, things can show up in the feed, and it's very difficult.
It won't normally show up. It wouldn't show up in their feed. That you, unless they are friends with you and whoever else is being in the discussion.
And I'm not an expert in Facebook, nor do I want to be, but for a simple example, let's say Zilpha really policed her feed so that her mother wasn't seeing, these things posting on her board. But I'm also a friend with Zilpha's mother. So she would see them through my feed. She would see your stuff through my, it's a really bizarre thing.
Oh.
So it's very difficult. But at some point, I think it's healthy for people to say, this is who I am, you know, and this is what I do, and sort of let the chips fall. I know that's not always possible in every circumstance. I'm not trying to give anybody advice on how to live, but I think there comes a point, and this is sort of the podcast's editorial stand, is we just have to, you know, let it all hang out.
Yeah, I chose literally. I separated myself from the community on Facebook, but I'm still on the blogs, and people can send me messages on Facebook privately, but I just don't do the chat thing in the Facebook anymore.
And I mean, that's a decision everybody has to make, you know, because, you know, religion, especially if you've lived outside the state of Utah, you know that religion is a taboo topic. And you're generally not supposed to, talk about that to other people. I was surprised when I moved back in the state how quickly people wanted to ask me about. They wanted to really pigeonhole my religious belief, which of course then I started tweaking them by drinking coffee and talking about my mission at the same time. So, but it's sort of like buzzed with their heads, you know, but in the real world outside of Utah, it's not okay to, you know, talk to people about religion in an uncomfortable way.
Especially, yeah, to grill them about their beliefs.
Yeah.
And to show up unannounced.
So here's the solution. If you have a coworker who is saying too much about religion, what you do is you come up to them and get about 4 inches inside their personal space. So be about 24 inches away from them. Reach out and touch their shoulder and make eye contact and say, "I'd like to talk to you about my friend Jesus Christ." That'll keep them away from you. All right. So safety. So I want to reiterate the point that Mormon expression is not and will never be safe. And I think that it's a mistake to try to make some of the historical problems or some of the issues in church culture or and try to sort of dumb them down so that members of the church will not be offended. You're always going to be in turbulent waters if you try to do that.
And then under a lot of stress psychologically.
Well, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
I emailed Richard Packham before I knew who he was.
Uh-huh.
And he and I have a similar kind of background of different, we have the same name, for example, our first name, but our educational histories and different things were a lot very similar. And this was before I was, completely open with my wife about it. And, I just lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
I pointed to his microphone.
Yeah, I wasn't pointing in there.
Richard Packham, your wife.
Yeah, Richard Packham, my wife. Sounds like a good time.
You emailed him. You didn't know who he was.
We were talking about being safe, and Richard Packham is not a safe poster.
Yeah. No, we were talking about lunacy. We were talking about going mad, right? So living one way and acting another is surely the path to crazy. And that's some of the language that it was a very thoughtful. What I asked him, I'll just share the email. I asked him, I said, if you could do it all again, would you? Cause I was kind of at that crossword where I wanted to know if I was just trying to get advice for someone that's gone through it. And he was very considerate and he took a weekend to think about it and you could tell, but basically for him and this is something that echoed with me is that, just living one way and believing a different way is on the path to crazy town. And that's, you know, so for him, he lost his wife and he lost, kids and that kind of thing. And I thought those were very real possibilities for me, but it turned out that I got luckier than that, but.
Yeah, they are real possibilities. And even if you don't lose them, well, odds are at least one of your relationships with somebody close to you is going to be damaged, rather severely by leaving the church. But for us, you know, we sort of tried to do that nom-ish thing and stay in the church and it just got increasingly anxiety prone.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a way to live for us. There's other people who can do it. And this might be a good segue into, Glenn, you've had a little bit of feedback on the board about your statement during the Bias podcast about integrity.
Uh huh.
So
what do you want me to? Yeah,
let's talk about that. So
okay.
So the comment has been made by many people who've left the church that integrity forces them to leave the church, and you came back and said, well, integrity keeps me in. Do you want to address that a little bit? I think that's kind of a non. I don't think it follows for most people.
Well, I think integrity. It depends on how you do it. I didn't go to church today, so it's kind of an interesting day to hit me up on it. But it's just if you're open and you're true to what you believe. Then I think that's integrity, right? I mean, when we did that podcast, I think Rich gave a really good definition of integrity and what that meant. And so if you follow that path and it leads you out of the church, then that's integrity. And if you follow that path, but you're able to stay in the church, then that's integrity. But I don't think that any one group can corner the market on integrity. So I just don't like it when one group says to the other, you know, I've got integrity and you don't, or I've got, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with it. So, you know, the way that I've done it is just being open about, where I am with my family, with my bishop, the people in the ward. That to me, that's integrity.
So, I guess I wonder.
I think to everyone, that's integrity. I would hope.
Yeah, because you're being honest with the people around you. But I just wonder why you would want to keep going if you don't think that it's really true. I just wonder that. I don't really understand it.
Well, there's other things that I do that I don't think are true. I mean, like, what does that mean that it's true?
Well,
I mean, John asked the question when we were having this discussion about integrity. I think I think it was on the Peterson masturbation podcast. He said, "Did Glenn just say the church was man-made?" And I said, "Yeah. I mean, Glenn did say the church is man-made. And so what? The church is man-made. So church isn't true. Or what does that mean? There's things about the church that are true, like being charitable towards people. I think that's true. I think you should be.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the church.
No, it doesn't at all.
No, it doesn't. Right. But so, if that's what the church is teaching, and if that's what my ward is about, and if that's what my bishop is saying we ought to do, and the messages that we're having in our elders quorum, and what he's teaching with the Relief Society, he's getting people together and saying this is what we should do, and the people in my ward are uniting and saying, you know, this is what we're going to build as a community, I can be part of that.
So it's more of that you're still getting benefits out of it. I can't think of the word.
Yeah. I went and
it's still helping you to live a better life in your opinion.
I went and helped a buddy of mine in the ward move his you know, I mean, in Elder's Quorum you help people move, right? It was great. I loved those guys. We had a great time. So there's that sense of community that still is really valuable to me. And I don't have to see eye to eye with them to be part of that community, and they don't make me.
Would you say, so when my wife and I started going through it and we started phrasing our sentences in the kind of light where that shed some doubt on the truthfulness of the church, instead of saying, I don't believe the church is true, we would say something like, I don't believe the church is what it claims it is. And that seems to soften it a little bit. So is that a statement that you would agree with? You'd say the church is true, but isn't what it claims it is?
I don't say that the church is true. I mean, say that again, Rich.
No, I'm just wondering, because that would seem to fit your logic. I'm just trying to relate. I'm kind of siding with you here, because I think that the church can be true in a sense, but I definitely don't think that it is what it claims it is, meaning that it's the one and only true way to get back to, to, you know, salvation and different things.
So Stephanie framed the question probably as a really good way to say it. Does the question boil down to, if you lose your testimony in order to preserve integrity, do you have to stop attending?
I don't think so. I mean, I like that cafeteria approach where you can pick and choose. Somebody made a comment on the board about me using jargon, and so I'm really I'm really trying to avoid using this term called reification. But it's helpful to me to do it, because reification is this term where you group all of these different things into one. And so when you say things like the church is true, instead of talking about different individual parts of it, that's where I have this problem. Like, oh, I've got to get rid of the church, instead of saying there's things about the church that I can stay in and I can hold on to this. You know, my family is part of the church. My kids are part of the church, and my parents are part of the church, and I'm going to stay in and be with them. I'm going to do this. My heritage is in there. And it's not just that. There's other things that are in there that are of value to me. And so I'm going to hold on to that for as long as I can.
And, great. Good, Glenn. Definitely.
You know, as long as there's that value.
Mm-hmm.
And when there isn't, there isn't. But, you know, it's been a long time for me that I've kind of taken the reins of that, instead of it having the reins on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as you have the reins, I think you're in a healthy position.
Yeah. Life as a Reader said, you don't have to believe a book is true to get together with other people and have a book club about it.
Great comment.
So this sort of leads us back to community, which is where we started here in the first place, which is what we were talking about, the live event. And this is something that actually Zilf and I both have spent a lot of time thinking about and talking about. And we were working a lot on it at the end of last year. We sort of put it on the table. I think that religion as a phenomena evolved as a social structure to fill in gaps in our evolutionary psychology. This is my opinion, and I'm not the only one who has it. I steal ideas from other people. But, you know, basically we evolved before we became agrarian out there in larger groups, in communities, if you will, of, you know, probably 100 to 300 folks. And you really couldn't leave those, but you had this, you know, because you would die out on the savannah if you left your community. But there was this community support that went above and beyond, say, nuclear relationships of the family. And the problem is we went to sort of an agrarian society. We split up. So we were no longer in these groups of 200 or 300 people. So I believe that religion has been a social creation to fill in that gap, that social need that we evolved to.
A new tribe.
And this goes to the, you know, what Mormon expression is about and why it's important and what's important afterwards, because people leave the church, but that's a negative action. That's just leaving something behind.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't leave behind the need for community. We don't leave behind the need for taking care of one another. And oftentimes, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine a few months ago, and he has since tempered his views. I've talked about it since, but he was fresh out of the church, and he was like, we were at a party or something, a mixer, and he was like, we don't need any other community. I was having the same conversation with him. We don't need any other community. We have a community right here. I said, yeah, but you don't see any sick people here. You don't see any like elderly people here. You don't see any children here. Community is about all of those people. And the problem is, we have not yet, and I mean we as all of humanity, and especially the atheists and the agnostics and the secularists, have not provided a good alternative to religion in general. So I think things like Mormon Expression and the boards and other things in the Damu are the first step in that, of providing that net of people leaving the church. But we all need to do more. So we're having a concert. That was a
And children aren't invited.
No.
And for one night.
Children are invited.
No. Whoever pays the entry fee is invited. It should be, we're not playing on anything dirty. It should be PG-13, I'm guessing, because Glenn has a potty mouth.
And but, it is an all-ages venue.
There's no alcohol. So, you know, to just ask. So I do want to address some of those issues. You know, we are charging $17 this time for it. And, we expect to either barely break even or take a loss on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sort of a fair trade kind of guy by philosophy. So we are paying our musicians. All of our musicians are getting paid. We have to pay for the venue. We have to pay for our sound guy. We have to pay for lights. So the $17 is sort of, Zilf and I aren't going to take any profit off that. But we're trying to make for something where people can go and feel comfortable because, you know, there's a nice social network along the Wasatch Front. And I really, really, believe it or not, I really, really enjoy meeting people. I wish everybody would come over to our house. Zilf's going to give me the stink eye. And,
am I?
You know, I everybody out there is welcome to come over, because I'd really love to meet everybody in person, and I'd love to sit down and talk with y'all. But we're looking for opportunities for people to sort of come out of the woodwork. When Zilf and I first were struggling with the church, we were up in Logan, in Smithfield, a couple miles north of Logan, and we felt so alone and
totally alone, isolated.
But I don't think at that time, if there had been like Jeff Ricks ran an ex-Mormon group at the, steakhouse.
Ruby Tuesday
every Sunday night. And we didn't even have the balls to go to that.
The reason was we had two little kids who wouldn't sit still for anything. And
right.
We didn't have any family around. So we just felt like we couldn't.
But we talked about separating up, but it was very scary.
Yeah, it was scary.
It's very scary to go to somebody's house.
We never did go to that. We were too scared.
Yeah. We're looking for ways for people to come out in a sort of a safe environment and to try to build some of that community. You know, that's sort of the driving force, behind that. And you know, we really hope everybody can make it.
It's going to be a good time.
And I did post our first musician. We've got five musical groups lined up, and the first one is, Peter and Mary Danzig, from their Otter Creek group. Fascinating story from those guys. You can look it up online, search for Peter and Mary Danzig. But so there are
not the band Danzig, the individuals Danzig.
I tried to get Danzig, and I had Slipknot lined up, but they backed out at the last minute. So Peter and Mary Danzig will be there, and I'll over the next couple weeks I'll be announcing the rest of the acts. Mike, are you coming?
I was talking to my wife about it. She said yes, so we're going.
Yay! Ooh, oh, good.
All right. So the one and only Mike Tannehill. So
it'll be fun. We're going to do some conversations and essays about kind of how to deal with the uncertainties of belief or non-belief, and just embrace the things that you can't predict and you can't hold on to tightly because, you know, they change. And it'll be fun, and I think it'll be enlightening. It'll be great.
Yeah, and if you're scared, you know, like you're a social, if you're socially phobic, what's the word? It is a regular concert venue. So when you go online to mormonexpression.com/tickets and you purchase your ticket, we will mail you a ticket and you'll come in. You can sit in your little seat and you can sit there in the dark and not talk to anybody if you want. And, you can play it safe.
Or you can come early and chat it up with people.
Yeah.
Yes. And I know last year I noticed some people, as soon as it was over, taking right off, you know, so they didn't engage. And that's perfectly fine if that's more comfortable for you. And in fact, I met someone in the audience last year who I believe has Asperger's, one of our listeners, who I believe it was quite nerve-wracking for her to be there in that social situation. But it seemed like she really felt, from chatting with her, that she felt very comfortable and embraced by the people there.
Yeah,
it was really fun last year, but it's going to be even better this year, and it'll be more entertaining, and it'll be more professionally done. I think that's what we're aiming for.
All right, next topic. So let me phrase this next one by reading a statement. This was left on the board. I forgot to write down who. RJ left this on the board a couple days ago, and I will read it. Mike, are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. For the record, I think Mike is a very important part of the ME dynamic. His views often annoy the hell out of me, but I still love him. Within the framework of modern mainline Orthodox Mormonism, his arguments are as consistent and uncompromised as you can get. It's pretty impressive that he's part of the ME team. However, as far as balance goes, there does seem to be a missing piece, and it's not that you're missing a middle-of-the-road apologetic-type perspective. I don't know the answer. It just seems that you all, except Mike, are a bit too much alike in your views. Also, to me, you seem to be more heavily geared towards the analytical side of the personality spectrum and not as much oriented towards the philosophical or theological, aside from Glenn, perhaps. Sorry, that's not a very articulate explanation. It's best I can do. I thought it was articulate. So
yeah, I read that earlier today. Yeah.
So I want to address, there's a couple things packed into there, and they're all very legitimate criticisms of the podcast. First of all, Mike, hey Mike. So why do you? People ask me all the time why you do this. Why do you? And I put words in your mouth several times on the podcast, but I'll let you speak for yourself.
I think what you said in that bias podcast is right.
That you were trying to convert us all.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's what I said.
I hate seeing people lose their testimony and faith, and sometimes it's over dumb stuff. And I hope, you know, something I say will affect somebody to encourage them to find their testimony again. That's my hope.
When is it not over dumb stuff, Mike?
It sounds like you're saying we were offended.
What was that, Robin?
It sounds like you're saying we were offended.
No. That's a rare case.
So just dumb stuff that doesn't offend us.
You're saying like things that that you feel like has a good apologetic response that people should accept instead of taking it more negatively. Things in the Book of Mormon, things in Mormon history.
You know, there's the historical stuff where somebody might have done something dumb and it's out of character for a Christian or whatever, and, you know, they lose their testimony over that. Or there's some people that think we're – who was it you were talking to the other day? They don't think we're Christian enough. We should be more Christ-centered, which boggles my mind. I never understood that when I heard it.
Grant Palmer?
Grant Palmer had that nonsense he was talking about.
Oh, my heavens. I can't believe what you said about Grant. You really should sit down and have lunch with him. I think you'd change your mind.
So
how can he say the church is in Christ-centered? That's
Mike
ridiculous.
Would change his mind.
So
we'll convert Mike. to Grant Palmer.
Let me ask
That's
this.
That's why we let Mike on here, because we all want to convert him.
In the 130 whatever episodes we've done, we've levied a lot of different attacks at the church, right? We've lobbed a lot of grenades. Haven't, yeah. In your opinion, have we ever made a good argument?
I can't think of anything that really stuck and stuck in my craw.
None of it, not
the killing of the cows.
The killing of the cows.
You still feel okay about all that
in
stuff?
Numbers or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought she was talking about the ancient Israelites and the spaceships stealing the cows to take back the North Pole.
Wait, I.
Oh, well, that.
What chapter are we in again?
You did the Lost Tribes episode. We talked about they came out of the North Pole and their spaceships and stole the cows.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So none of that stuff sticks for you, huh? All the changed scriptures and the lies and the marrying other men's wives and the.
And the many accounts.
No, I understand that. I understand why it happened. And
so why did they marry other faithful men's wives? Because I don't understand that.
If you want to go off topic for a minute,
I thought the topic was because we're on it. The topic today is whatever we're talking about. So,
in the Abrahamic covenant thing, we talked about how we're sealed forward and backwards to our families, and we're saved together.
Yeah.
If Joseph understood that his children were not going to stay faithful, which they did not, those that stayed with Emma left the church. If he sealed himself to other families that were faithful, then he's tied into their line and their chain. So he's sealed to other faithful families. With those families, he's saved.
Wait, you lost me. Okay, let's get more specific. Zena Huntington, married to Henry, faithful member, died in Utah, faithful his whole life. Joseph Smith married her.
He's bound into their family through the covenant.
Who's he?
Joseph.
Joseph.
He's bound into which family?
Tied into that family through the Abrahamic covenant.
Henry
alongside that family.
Henry Jacobs?
He wasn't sealed to Joseph.
So whose family is tied into where?
If he's sealed to his wife, she is sealed to that husband, then they are all sealed together as a family and are saved as a family.
That includes Henry?
Mike thinks that Henry was sealed to...
No, Henry was never sealed to his Zena. Wife.
I don't know. I don't follow it as closely. Okay,
actually, I think Emma got a pass, didn't she? Because her election was made sure.
Not according to Brigham.
Well, Joseph said he'd go down into hell to get her, so she's safe no matter what.
No, Brigham said he heard Joseph say that. Just a nitpick.
Okay.
When you're talking about people being married to other wives and stuff, what you're actually talking about is families being tied together through the covenant.
Has their work not been done for him, Mike, in the temple?
I don't know. I was
– get on it.
Mike, let me ask you – no, I don't – never mind.
Go ahead. Go.
an orphan girl is born in Calcutta in the year 1200.
Okay.
She has no resources. She becomes a prostitute. She has a child. She dies. The child becomes an orphan. The child dies. How does that child, who has no connection to any priesthood, no connection to any male, has no lineage, has no genealogy, has no record, that child just languishing in hell? The child died when it's 12. Was a thief. Stole bread.
Well, it's in spirit prison. It's not part of...
It is in prison. Let's be clear. In your theological
spirit was in prison prior to Christ's resurrection. All spirits were in prison. Everyone was. All right. Post-resurrection,
Moses,
those that were in the covenant were pulled out and made missionaries to bring other people out. But,
Moses,
the temple work has to be done.
Do they suffer when they're in prison?
No, it's just they're...
They don't suffer when they're in prison?
Some do.
Is it nice?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. But I know that people like that there's people that there's no record of, obviously. There's no sign that they ever existed in any way. And, you know, that's what the millennium's for. We'll get all the temple work done and get them bound into the family.
Everything's sealed up in the millennium.
All right.
That's what the millennium's for. That's why we need all these temples built, because there's going to be so much work to do in the millennium.
Your religion to me, Mike, people call you an extremist. I've said this before. I think wards are full of people who believe just like you do. I think you're sort of a little right of center, but I think you're pretty mainstream, except when you start talking about sticking javelins in people's hearts.
you're not going to let that go, are you?
Not until you say you don't mean it.
But Mike, your religion just makes no sense to me whatsoever. I mean, it's overly legalistic. It's pharisaical. And this goes to Grant Palmer's point. The religion you describe right there, to me, has nothing to do with Christianity. They're just completely incompatible.
Didn't Christ say for everybody to be obedient and be baptized and enter into the covenant? Weren't those his words?
I don't think he ever said covenant.
Go out and baptize these people. That's a legalistic approach that the sealing has to be done.
It's only legalistic once you read onto baptism, the sort of legalistic reading that people have in the Mormon church. If you look at baptism as a sort of figurative sign of entering into the kingdom, then it's nothing like that.
And what about the baptisms for the dead that they did?
Who did?
The early Christian church. You have Clement making mention of it in his records when he dealt with Peter.
Well, I mean, what about all the things the Gnostics said? The Mormons don't follow all that crap.
I'm talking about Clement's testimony that he discussed with Peter baptisms for the dead.
Right. You're proof texting. You're pulling things out of this. You have this big corpus of early Christian writings, the majority of which are not in harmony with Mormonism at all. So you have this big garbage pile of stuff that you say is all trash, and then you find one tin can out of there and say it proves your point. It doesn't prove anything unless you can deal with the whole mess of it, because anybody has to look at early Christian writings and discount some of them, be it the Gnostics or whoever. So right. I don't see how you can find anything in there that backs up your cause. It's like if you have a liar on the stand in a court case. And he lies and lies and lies and lies and lies and lies and lies. But on like page 34 of his testimony, say, see, there's a truth right there. How do we know it's truth? Because it conforms to what I was telling you before. Anyway. All right. Let's go back to my, this way. I think you're dangerous on the podcast, Mike. It always becomes about you.
I think, you know, you have Niall who's more extreme than you. Then you have you. Then you have Glenn and
Tom.
Wait,
I'm not extreme at all. What are you talking about? What extreme position do I have?
I just meant you're. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah. What is the word?
He's charismatic.
He's
Atheist, I guess. Are you claiming to be atheist?
I am not an atheist. Thank you for bringing that.
He's
agnostic.
I'm not more agnostic about my agnosticism. I'm not really very agnostic
either.
You're
an apatheist, maybe.
Yeah. I'm an apatheist, yeah. I think the question of God is uninteresting.
But I think Glenn and Tom are more quick to go back to church than you are.
Well, they still go to church. But I think they go to church for entirely different reasons than you go to church.
That's true.
They can repent.
So Mike is here because Mike has the huevos to do it, and he's willing to sit through what we just did right there. So people ask, why isn't there another, you know, more balanced position? And I asked the question to the Mormon world. They're welcome. Come on. Well, we've said that several times.
Yep.
And I think that the idea that Tom and Glenn and Zilpha and I and all the rest are sort of unified in our thoughts is, I don't think that's true.
No, we disagree quite often.
I don't think so. No, we disagree all the time. Yeah. Glenn?
Yeah. I think RJ's got a point in what he said, the different positions. There are probably more voices out there that have different positions on things. There was a post that Erica wrote, you know, Erica's a girl that's in my ward here. I home teach her. She was actually over here last night. We had a discussion about this in similar similar ways. And she's somebody that would like to come on at some point and express her positions. I told her she has to listen to more than 10 episodes of Mormon Expression before she can really expertly say whether or not we have that kind of balance that RJ was talking about or not. And so she's going to go back and listen to some more. I think there is more balance than really what she was claiming there wasn't. But I do think that there are probably more viewpoints between where even Tom and I are and Mike is. I think there's other believing Mormon voices out there that aren't as extremely kooky as Mike is.
But we would love to have them come on. We just can't find them.
There is a criteria that I've never talked about before.
Yeah.
We talk about a lot of matters of fact. And matters of fact can be can be argued about. Like if you say, all right, this section of Doctrine and Covenants was changed. We talk about that, and then we talk about the reasons why it was changed. A lot of mainstream LDS people get into sort of an epistemological shield pattern on that sort of stuff, where they will defer and say, we really don't know if it was changed, and we really can't trust that source, and we really don't know what the intention was, and oh, that's presentism. We don't know what people were thinking in the 19th century, and we don't know the definition of that word. I will not tolerate that bullshit. So if they want to come on and play that apologetic throw sand in our eyes game, then they've got to read the material and they've got to deal with it. And Mike does. And Mike has never done that. And so Mike's got the temerity to look at the whatever changes and to try to deal with them without just saying, oh, we don't understand what the word is. That sort of game.
I did not have sex with that woman.
Neither did I.
Hey, can I say something? And Glenn kind of chastised me about this, and yet it was an honest chastisement because I know I can come across this way. But Glenn was saying I'm not loving enough and that I can come across as egotistical. And I am the first to tell you all my faults, all right? It's not ego that I'm coming forward with. It's surety of what I'm talking about. It's not ego.
Well, and I think that's
I didn't say egotistical. I said you don't say you're sorry.
Oh, I don't.
You can't go to bed.
Mike's
angry.
Like, I can't say I'm sorry for things I believe.
I'll come to his defense there because I would say we all come across as egotistical, some of us more than others, and none of us say we're sorry. So I mean, I don't think.
Yeah, we do say we're sorry.
We do.
I think Mike is. I've met Mike in person. I've talked to him a lot. He's a very loving, kind guy. But some of his religion is a little kooky, you know.
Is a little not loving.
But I don't, he didn't write it. I don't blame him for that. but yeah, you have to, I've said this before too, you have to have a certain ego to like record yourself and post it on the internet.
Right. And that's another thing is we are always bringing on new voices and we're trying to get a variety of perspectives. So, I mean, that's something that we're always working on. But at the same time, how do you find people? Well, we don't actually go out and you know, knock on doors and try to find people. People come to us and say that they're interested in participating, and then we say, okay, we'll give it a shot. And, I mean, you know, so we kind of get what we get.
Yeah. Let's be clear. There's no pay. It takes a certain amount of time. You have to be available when we record. You have to have the temerity to actually reach out to us. And not everybody – It's not a natural thing. Not everybody can execute it well. And so, you know, to be able to throw yourself in the mix, is not necessarily a really super easy thing to do. But, on that note, Brent, you have my email address, john@mormonexpression, you know, contact me. And that being said, what I do now is I tend to try to staff discussions based on people who can bring an interesting perspective to it. And we do have, if you've all noticed, we have sort of a bigger, you know, we have like the main hosts, you know, like Glenn or Tom, and then we have a bigger pool of people we bring on. And I wish we could do 5 podcasts a week because there's a lot of people who we've had on who are in the pool who really want to come on, but it just takes time to work them in, you know, and we sort of set the word out in the end of the year. And we've gathered a group of about 6 or 8 people who are really great people who I want to work in more, but it just takes time to get them in the mix.
Yeah. Stephanie says, why not extend the essay contest to a guest panelist contest?
That could be. I mean, you know.
But, I mean, like I said, anybody who's interested in coming on just needs to contact us and take the initiative and get here or get their equipment and we'll give them a shot. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's been several times that if you listen to the podcast, maybe you won't pick it up, but people who just came here and I just told them to pull up a seat and they contributed. So it does happen.
What's the format that you prefer to have? Are you talking about Sinclair 73? Are you talking about the essay, like MP3, or what do you mean format?
Sinclair, I know you have Skype. You should join us by voice next time.
You can use Skype
if there is a next time.
If you're talking about the format of the show, you know, we've experimented with several different formats.
Elder's Quorum doesn't work.
Hosting, and maybe Glenn can back me up on this one. It's difficult to get in and throw yourself into the, you know, if you watch any of the guest shows where they have lots of people on, it's not an easy thing to like jump in. And hosting is a different skill set. And not everybody can be hard to do.
It's very difficult.
It's like a point guard in a basketball game where you're trying to distribute the ball to get everybody involved. You know, you don't want to be a ball hog and take all the shots. You want to get other people involved. But then there's other times
they're not watching and you hit them in the face.
Yeah. But I mean, like there's times I kind of prefer being a panelist where I can just kind of sit back and listen and wait and let John handle the thing and then, you know, wait for him to pass it to me or something like that. But then there's times where he's dribbling the ball and he feels like I come over and like take it away out of his hands. And, you know, we were kind of, you know, tussling back and forth, you know, so there's all these things like that with hosting that goes back and forth. It's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah. The podcast, hopefully, if I'm doing it right, sounds less scripted or less planned than it actually is. So there is upfront work with every topic and we get a lot of suggestions for topics and sometimes we pass on them or we don't get to them because they're just difficult topics to address or difficult things to approach. So, you know, the question comes, you know, what do you prefer? Oftentimes especially if the topic is more tight, like we're talking to an author about something special, I will tend to do those by myself because it's much easier to do that way. For several reasons, it's easier to, sometimes like authors might say, well, what are the questions you're going to ask? Well, if I'm having a panel, I can't provide them the questions I'm going to ask. So having a panel is a little bit more out of control. So if you mix in an author or a subject matter expert with a panel, it can oftentimes go south.
And sometimes it's like gang up on the expert, and the expert is like, wah, you know, yeah. Who are all these people?
Right, right. And you know, also if I'm talking to an expert and I have sort of an arc of the questions that I want to do in a certain order, you know, having another person there can throw that off because they can ask your final question in the first 6 minutes. And then you're like, well, there goes my notes. For that reason, when I'm interviewing,
it depends on the subject matter also and the type of expert they are. And, it just depends how you want the conversation to sound in the end. If you want it to sound more of a conversation, or a more formal interview or what you're going for, and they can all be different.
And I think some of our best conversations have gone when we kind of forget that there's any kind of format and we just kind of start talking. And, you know, maybe for like 5 or 10 minutes, it's just a conversation.
Yeah, but that's true. I think they can be interesting. But you also have to remember you're really pulling a needle out of a haystack at that point because for like after discussions, 99% of them are not broadcast worthy. You know, they're just not interesting.
Well, I wasn't just talking about after discussions. I mean, like in the course of whatever we're talking about, where it just becomes a discussion within the frame of the podcast.
Yeah. And there's a line, you know, that the people listening to the podcast get to know the personalities. there's a line of being too self-referential and too inside jokish versus being too, you know, cold and not interesting. And so there's a balance we're always trying to walk mm-hmm. there. And it can be affected by how much people studied and prepared, how much they agree with the question at hand, or if they want to talk about something else.
How interested they are in the topic.
How interested they are. So when I'm planning.
How tired they are that night.
Yeah, Zilf and I were going to record one last Saturday, or Sunday. We were both grumpy and we said, no, it's not a good idea. So we didn't do it. But, you know, I pick topics for mine, the ones that I do, that interest me, that I want to talk about. And I know there's a lot of interesting things I haven't, but I mean, I have to be able to deliver on my side, I guess.
Yep.
All right. I'm looking through. Are there any more comments? There's a plan. Sometimes there's a plan. Go Ask Alice and Jay's Journal were true stories that influenced a lot of LDS kids in the likely centers. I read Go Ask Alice. That was about that 15-year-old who was a drug addict.
Yes.
But I didn't know there was a connection to the LDS world on that one. At least I don't remember there being one. And the White Knight talks backwards. I remember that part. All right, so we've gone about an hour. The rest of you, especially, I want to hear from some of our newer folks. So, Rich, you have any thoughts about the podcast? What's good? What's bad?
Or some of the episodes we've done since January? If you think some of them were, you know, should have gone in the toilet instead of out on the
We talked about that up to the 100th episode, but yeah, I don't know if there were any. Any like bad ones we put out? What about
or
you guys
spectacular
out in the,
ones
in the chat room? Anything you like hated? What, you said the naked one. Is that a good one or a good one or a bad one? Oh, she says ick. And Sinclair also said that she loved the dummy series. I agree that that's been a strength. That's sort of where we're refocusing. At least I'm refocusing a lot of my energy in on some more of those. And then, and reader, do you like those or not like them? Gay issues, you like them or not like them? You have to use a subjective term.
Okay, like, there we go. Like the Mormon vocabulary one.
The Mormon expressions. Mormon expression.
Yeah. The
gay ones that we've done. The guy who's still going to church.
Steve.
Yeah. Stephen Fair. Yeah, that was a good one.
Bias podcast. What was great about the Bias podcast, like you said, you had a good chemistry and you guys just had a good conversation. Like Lynn was talking about, you just went as just a conversation with each other and it was really strong.
Yeah. And I think we have to, we can't let ourselves fall into a rut. We have to give ourselves permission to experiment and talk about things. We have to give ourselves permission to not always be, you know, knocking them out of the park. And, you know, and some of the ones that people don't like are polarizing, that some people really like them. You know, like the nudist ones, we actually got call from the press on that one. I don't think anybody ever run stories on it, but, you know, I still think it's an interesting topic. Sometimes those are hard to pull off.
I actually thought that was a well done.
Which one?
The nudity one. I thought that it was interesting to hear their perspective and why they do it. And
yeah,
I thought it was interesting.
We've had a lot of conversations with people since, for a while there, for like 2 or 3 months, whenever anybody met Zilf and I, that's the first thing they'd bring up. But I think a lot of that, to me, exposed their own biases and feelings about
insecurity.
And that's really one of the reasons we did that one. It wasn't, to me, the episode wasn't about nudism at all. It was about Mormon ideas of chastity and modesty. And that's it, when I listened back to it, that's what I kept hitting mm-hmm. on. That's what we talked about. And people get wrapped up around the naked issue. But,
right, and I'm not exactly sure still what it is about. I mean, it's not like I feel comfortable being naked around other people because I do not.
No, no.
But I wish that we could as a culture kind of break out of that. I mean, I don't think that's a super healthy attitude to have about our bodies, that naked is ick. I don't really see that.
Well, it's the same thing about masturbation. And if there's any reason, I bring it up all the time in joking, but it's such a, can be such a small thing that has such big consequences psychologically. Mm-hmm. And there is a taboo on it that I'll tell you right out that I'm trying to break by repeating it over and over and over again. So people don't feel that taboo. Not that every, well, all true Mormon Expression fans will rub one out tonight, but
do your part.
Think of the children.
No, don't. No.
I take that.
Is that anything like the worms in the tub?
That would be edited out. I did not mean it that way at all. Write letters. Okay, to Glenn
as much
Auslan.
as much as the gay thing bothers me, that was an excellent interview you did with your friend.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Stephen?
Nate.
Yeah,
oh, Nate.
The one that
was
just
a
couple months ago.
It wasn't a couple months ago. Nate's was a year ago. The one.
Oh, what was the one?
The one with Stephen, who still goes to church. That was Robin's friend.
Stephen Fair was
okay.
Yeah, Nate was a couple years ago, and you have to understand, you know, the chemistry between Nate and Zilpha, which is probably my favorite episode ever. But a lot of that comes from the fact that you guys had known each other. It was an intimate conversation between friends.
Yeah, we were intimate friends.
That's not something you can achieve.
No, you can't fake that. You can't just, you know, get somebody on and say, let's have an intimate conversation.
Yeah. So, yeah, the naked part was, I mean, it was sort of gimmicky, but I think it spoke to the point of the podcast, which is we have these weird attitudes about nudity and modesty. And
Is it really that weird to be naked?
The fact that people are still reacting negatively to a radio recording or an audio recording of people being naked shows that we probably don't have healthy attitudes about nudity. Like Zilpha said, she and I are not nudists. We haven't been to any nudist functions, nor do we plan on going to them. But, you know.
It's just an interesting aspect of our American psychology.
Right.
Ted has a good suggestion. We do a Paul H. Dunn episode.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of the episodes that get put on my yeah shelf are the question has to be sort of locked down enough that we can talk, you know, we can talk about it. So Paul H. Dunn, yeah, are we just going to talk about his stories, and we need to go look up his stories and da 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 da, his role in the culture, you need to go look up the old newspaper articles. Yeah, so that's one that I think would be a good one, but I think of that immediately say, oh, that's 10 hours
of
research.
Look at all that research.
Yeah.
which we can handle occasionally, just not every single podcast.
Right.
We just
don't
have the time.
Yep, definitely. And that's probably why the Dummies ones don't come out like one after the other, is they do take
a
certain amount
of research
because we don't want to go in there. We have never been lit up that much for saying things that were factually incorrect. I think we've done pretty good at fact checking. Now, there are things that, you know,
we don't know.
We're pulling from secondary resources. We usually try to acknowledge that, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't want to prolong it anymore. Oh, yeah. I was going to get the new guys. Any other thoughts from Rich or Robin?
All gold. It's good.
It's all good.
That's good.
Robin?
Nothing from me.
Mike, you have any last words? Where do you want to see us go?
I just enjoy
not
being back hell. Again.
Yeah, you enjoy being back, and we enjoy having you back, Mike. And you can meet Mike. You can shake his hand and have him sign a copy of your what's your
Book
favorite
of Mormon?
What your answering hard questions by McConkie at the live show. All right, Glenn, anything from you?
Biasms.
Great new word.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues. And, man, it's been continuing the last couple of weeks. They've been lighting the board up. So a lot of fascinating, interesting people. I do read. I don't comment as much as I would like to, mostly because I have a full-time job and a couple kids and a wife. But I do read everything that comes across the board, and there are some really great discussions and some intelligent stuff that goes on there. I would invite anybody who's a fan of the podcast to go hit the boards and see what people are saying, because there's some interesting stuff. So,
we have a new Facebook Mormon Expression podcast community.
Yeah, definitely. The Mormon Expression.
If you're not too hesitant, because it's a public page.
And
but.
Facebook is, to go back to where we started, Facebook is the primary way we communicate with people. I wish we had better avenues of communication and getting the word out and doing that sort of stuff. I did, there's two flyers up there that everybody is supposed to go print out and hang on the bulletin board.
But if you wait maybe till next week, we'll have one for the live event you can put up at the same time.
I don't think I'll have it done by next week, but. But so go print one of those out. I like the Eve one the best.
I like the Joseph Smith with headphones.
The Joseph Smith headphones is a good one. So go print those out and put them at your favorite supermarket or whatever.
I bet people will tear down the one with Adam and Eve because they're nude.
But you don't see anything.
it's a well-placed apple.
and by the way, we had a well-placed table here, so.
And. For Eve. By all, please, our email is john@mormonexpression.com, Zilpha@mormonexpression, but she never checks that email, so no, it's best to send one to me to tell Zilpha something. But, you know, we would like to meet you in real life. We'd like to hear your story. We'd like to all that sort of stuff. We're probably, and I wish we had the money to go around all the country and tour through the world and see everybody, but, you know, we do, take everybody out there seriously, and I just wish there were better ways for us to meet up in real life. We are planning on having a summer social somewhere, probably in Salt Lake City area, and it's going to be a funeral potatoes and Jello salad
cooking
contest with the. I like them both, by the way, especially together.
the Jello salad.
So anyway, that's
can I give a thank you to all the bloggers for running my thing up to 197 comments. That was great.
Wow, is that the highest?
Wow,
I think that isn't it?
Way to go, Mike.
Mail me a brownie now.
Check out.
I owe you a brownie.
Brownie points for the blog. Just kidding.
So and we're still looking for new bloggers. If you'd like to be a Mormon Expression blogger, that doormat is still.
Sitting there.
You're still welcome.
You can be the door.
Waiting to be walked on.
All right. All right. So as always, like I said, the discussion continues, and I'm done for the night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.